Welcome to China in Context. I am Duncan Bartlett. In the view of China's foreign minister, Wang Yi, the failure to end the humanitarian disaster in Gaza is a tragedy for humanity and a disgrace for civilization. He says that China firmly supports the Palestinian people's cause. The issue has led to heated disagreements at the UN Security Council, of which China is a permanent member. Yet, despite the rhetoric, China acts with caution in the region, and this makes it tricky to understand its objectives. Could China, for example, pressure Israel through economic and commercial sanctions, or indeed cut off diplomatic ties with Tel Aviv completely? I'm pleased to welcome a guest who's offered to help us grapple with some of the difficult questions thrown up by the complex situation in the Middle East. Dr. Mercy Kuo is Executive Vice President and Geopolitical Risk Advisor at Pamir Consulting, a global risk intelligence firm in Metro Washington, D.C. Mercy, welcome back to China in Context.
Thank you, Duncan. Good to be back.
The current round of conflict in the Middle East began when Hamas terrorists attacked Israel on October the 7th, 2023. More than 1,000 people were killed and 200 people, in fact more than that, were taken hostage. How was that atrocity interpreted by the Chinese?
I think the way in which China interpreted Hamas's October 7th attack on Israel is quite telling. If we take a close look at the formulation of China's foreign ministry statements in the aftermath of October 7th, the absence of any reference to Hamas as a terrorist group shifted the focus away from Hamas and instead reframed the attack, Hamas's attack, in the context of negotiating a two-state solution for Palestine, which I might add, Foreign Minister Wang Yi stated on October 13th, is, quote, at the core of the Middle East issue, end quote, and then also called for an international peace conference to address the Palestinian question. So the foreign ministry's silence on Hamas as the aggressor against Israel and Israel's right to defend itself essentially avoided legitimating Israel as a victim and target of terrorism. So if we follow the progression of China's subsequent statements and actions, it has become rather evident that, in my opinion, despite the calls for peace, justice, and equity, China's open support for Palestinian right to self-determination is clearly signaling to Iran and other regional stakeholders that China is interpreting the war in Gaza in a way to influence the direction and discourse on the future of Palestine.
Well, that's a very carefully researched answer. Thank you, Mercy. Now, in March 2024, a Chinese envoy met a political leader of Hamas called Ismail Haniyeh in Qatar. And about the same time, the foreign minister, Wang Yi, said, "The long-cherished aspiration of the Palestinians for an independent state should not be evaded anymore." It sounds as though China is very pro-Palestinian. How do you read the situation?
Indeed, Duncan, this would be an accurate description of China's pro-Palestinian position. It might be helpful to consider just a little bit of the historical context here. China's support for Palestine has deep historical roots dating back to the 1960s, when the leader of China at the time, Mao Zedong, recognized and supported the Palestinian cause. If we fast forward in December of 2022, at the Arab States China Summit in Saudi Arabia, Chinese leader Xi Jinping expressed direct support for Palestine and an independent Palestinian state. And then on February 22nd of this year, at the International Court of Justice, China's foreign ministry legal advisor, Ma Xinmin, argue that in pursuit of the right to self-determination, the Palestinian people have the right to, and this is a direct quote, the use of force to resist foreign oppression and to complete the establishment of the Palestinian state. Beijing is voicing support for Palestinian self-determination is a way of positioning China as a stakeholder in shaping the region's geopolitical and economic dynamics in ways that would benefit China in the region.
Those are good points. I'll share my own perspective, if I may, Mercy. I mean, it's not just China that's talked about the aspiration for a two-state solution. That's also been something that President Joe Biden spoke about in the State of Union address. I know it's something that the British Foreign Secretary David Cameron advocates. And yet, in Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli Prime Minister, there's strong resistance to a two-state solution because he doesn't want a Palestinian state run by Hamas. And Hamas itself is not an enthusiastic supporter of a two-state solution. So it does create an enormous diplomatic dilemma, not just for China and the United States, but for the entire world.
Exactly. It's really true. There is this, the international discourse about it. And then when you look at what the Israelis and Palestinians are saying about it, there's a kind of dissonance about what the actual on the ground perspective is. So it is a diplomatic imbroglio, as you rightly describe.
Well, let's talk about Iran's role in this situation. Does China have enough influence with the Iranian leaders to persuade them from escalating the conflict by, for example, attacking Israel or using proxies to attack Israel?
I think it would be helpful here to consider China's handling of the Houthi attacks on foreign ships in the Red Sea and what it tells us about Beijing's calculus vis-a-vis Iran. China made it clear to Iran that the Houthis should not target China's major state-owned enterprise shipping company, COSCO, ships transiting the Red Sea. Beijing was not too concerned about the safety of other foreign ships traversing the Red Sea. This tells us, not unsurprisingly, that as long as Iran does not harm Chinese interests, Beijing will refrain from imposing too much pressure on Iran and also Iran-backed Houthis to disrupt Israeli and other U.S. allied shipments transiting the Red Sea. And then also highlight that China is a beneficiary of discounted Iranian oil. China's imports of Iranian oil reached 1.2 million barrels per day in 2022, for example, a 130% increase from 2021, and it will continue to increase. On a strategic level, Iran is a comprehensive strategic partner of China. They share an autocratic agenda of imposing domestic repression, and they're okay with disrupting regional geopolitical dynamics. Now, as a non-NATO major ally of the United States in the region, Israel represents democratic governance and wields military might in the Middle East. So to the extent that Iran can destabilize Israel through proxies, which it is currently doing through Hamas, Hezbollah, Islamic militants, Tehran by extension is drawing the U.S. into a regional conflict, which serves China's geostrategic calculus in the broader U.S.-China strategic competition. And let me just break this down a little bit. So Beijing perceives the U.S. As overstretched into war zones, Ukraine and Israel. It also sees polarizing U.S. domestic politics, which raises doubts about U.S. long-term commitment to both countries, as we're seeing played out in the U.S. Congress. So as Xi Jinping and the Chinese Communist Party watch the war in Gaza evolve, it would not be surprising if Beijing questions the credibility of U.S. commitment to Taiwan's security. So this is the overarching geostrategic picture that we're looking at.
I mentioned earlier that China could, at least in theory, put economic sanctions on Israel or even sever diplomatic ties. What's your view on those options?
Israel's strategic value to China is geopolitical and technological, and should be understood again in this U.S.-China strategic competition. China's interest in Israel's critical and cutting-edge technology is significant. And even though Israel is not a signatory of the Belt and Road Initiative, Chinese infrastructure projects in Israel are substantial. So for Beijing, maintaining relations with Israel is a key component of China's military, China's Middle East strategy, which is on the long run to weaken U.S. leadership and influence in the region and propagate China's alternative model of governance and development. So by positioning China as a countervailing alternative to U.S. leadership in the region, Beijing can advance its broader agenda of reconfiguring the international rules-based order into a new order that benefits China and like-minded autocratic states.
Now, it's noteworthy to me that the Chinese rhetoric on the Middle Eastern conflict is very similar to that which we hear from Russia. I'm wondering if they're both trying to exploit this situation in order to challenge the US-led international order.
I think so, definitely. The whole double standards narrative is a key feature of China's discourse power, namely to magnify the moral failings of the United States in order to divert attention away from those of the Chinese government. So, of course, specifically, I'm thinking here of the plight of the Uyghurs in Xinjiang. So in so doing, China reframes the discourse to appeal to first China's domestic audience, as well as, I would say, global South countries who are disenchanted with the ways of the West. So we see this phrasing, the duplicity of the United States. It's a consistent theme in Chinese official commentary on the U.S. approach, not only in Israel and the Hamas war, but in general. And it reflects an overarching narrative that China seeks to amplify. So coming back to this whole Palestinian question, by championing Palestinians' right to self-determination, China actually is promoting itself as a viable alternative to U.S. leadership and messaging to Arab countries that it intends to support their long-term regional interests.
But Russia and China have a point, though, don't they? Because on the one hand, the U.S. and its allies, and I include the U.K. here, emphasize the importance of respecting human rights, yet they're accused by their critics of maintaining double standards when it comes to tolerating Israel's harsh treatment of the Palestinians. So what you're saying is that is a particularly significant charge when it comes to the perspective of China, isn't it?
Right. It feeds into the overall narrative. It will spotlight vulnerabilities in the U.S. approach in foreign policy. So the double standards, it plays into and amplifies this narrative. We can debate whether it's right or wrong. We can also take a look at what China is doing, whether it's in protectionism in the WTO, treatment toward Uyghurs, human rights issues. But when all is said and done, what the purpose of it, I would say, is it contributes to the amplification of the autocratic agenda that both China and Russia are promoting.
Mercy, thank you so much for your insightful answers. That was Dr. Mercy Kuo, Vice President of Pamir Consulting, a global risk intelligence firm, on the line from Washington. This podcast is produced by the SOAS China Institute, part of the University of London, and you can find out more about our courses and research at soas.ac.uk. But for now, that's all from us here on the China in Context podcast team. Thank you.